it was for that area, quite nice. Two big rooms, cloak rooms on either side going into those rooms, and then there was a partition between the two that would they could raise sections of it to look toward the other room where there was a stage, and the stage was only about a foot high.
Mountain children attend?
Yes, yeah, so they located it there so that the school would service the Fighting Creek community in the Forks of the River area, and then part of the children up toward the Sugar Lands, up toward the Newfound Gap area.
How far did you have to walk this well?
Well, I was only like a mile, I guess, from school. Uh-huh. People in the Fighting Creek area where the little school was burned wanted the school back there. So to compromise with them, they put the school at Forks of the River, and then but they called it Fighting Creek School. Mm-hmm. Went by. I've still got my eighth grade diploma in there. So that was a compromise
what
on
were
that.
Study.
Well, we had the basic things: your reading and arithmetic, mm-hmm. and let's see. Well, as you went along in the grades, you know, you had a little more to do, but it was mainly the reading and arithmetic. And then, let's see, we had Tennessee history, I guess, in eighth grade then. But we'd have, there was a lot more done in learning to write and to read. Of course, we didn't have very much in the way of writing paper and all. We'd take a couple of eggs to the little grocery store to buy us a rough leaf tablet and a mm-hmm. penny pencil that we used. And so a lot of the writing at school was done on the blackboards. Mm-hmm. Children liked to do that. And of course, some of them didn't have the writing paper to use, and boards about all they had. So some of the bigger students would help some of the smaller ones, you know, and they'd write on the board or draw pictures and that sort of thing. That the one room had the first three grades, and the other room had the fourth through the eighth, and that pretty much evened up the teacher load there with the two teachers, because some dropped out before they finished the eighth grade, and that pretty much evened up the teacher load in each room. We had our heat, of course, was a stove that stood in the middle of the school room. They had well, by the time I was going to school, they shipped coal in to supplement the wood they used for the fires. And you could start school back then when you were, let's see, maybe 5 years old or so, or sometimes the older students would take little brothers and sisters that were way too small to be and too young to be in school. Mm-hmm. But nothing was ever done. They'd take them and they wanted to. So you could pretty well start on your own. But school terms, let's see, maybe 7 months there, they'd let the students out to help plant crops. I mean, they'd let them out early enough in spring to do that, mm-hmm. and then to help gather crops in the fall before school started. And, of course, before I was in school there, my half-brother, they had what they called subscription school, so where the teacher taught for just what the parents could pay him. And one fellow I knew that lived beyond Gatlinburg, the other direction from out of Gatlinburg, walked from Gatlinburg past our place up into the Sugarlands area. This is going toward Newfound Gap. He would have walked about 20 miles, I suppose, to his teaching job. And he made about $17.50 a month, I think. And he walked morning and night to that. And that was the pay that he would be getting. And my brother, half-brother, teachers would teach, way back there, they teach like 3 months at those subscription schools I'm talking about. They teach 3 months at one school. Mm-hmm. And my brother went and stayed with a cousin to attend school up in the Sugar Lands. Then when they moved to another school, the cousin came and stayed with him for the 3 months that the teacher would be there. So he went to some different places to get in 3 months of schooling that way. But by the time I was in school, the county, of course, was furnishing two teachers for the school that I attended. And we didn't have a lunch room. You took your lunch in a paper poke, we called it, a paper bag. And usually that was maybe a couple of biscuits, maybe one with ham meat or streaked meat and one with jam, jelly, or whatever. And sometimes you might take a baked sweet potato or roast New Year, but usually it was just maybe the biscuits. One time my sister, this was when she was going to school, had gone to school in Gatlinburg, she went into the little cafe down there where they sold writing paper and things like that too. So she was thought she was reaching a few eggs she'd taken to buy her supplies with, and she embarrassed herself because she put her lunch up there and he opened it and it was her biscuits instead of the eggs she's taken to buy her things with. And of course couple of eggs back then would buy you quite a bit. My mother would send us to the little store up there in the Sugar Lands area sometimes for maybe a spool of thread she needed, and there'd be like a penny left over with the few eggs we took from what she was buying. And we'd buy a penny poke of candy, and you get a whole big sack of it for penny. So that was always a treat, of course. And earlier there, when I was growing up, we didn't have, for quite some years there, we didn't have the cold drinks up there, Coca-Colas and so on. Mm-hmm. And when they did begin to get them there, and some of the grown-up boys were able to buy them for a nickel. You paid a nickel for a bottle, a glass bottle of Coca-Cola. And some of those pictures that were made up there, they'd had their picture made holding their Coke, you know, because that was something to kind of show off. They could afford to buy nickel Coke. Or they'd often have their knives, that whatever their prized possessions was, they'd holding their knife. Or if they owned a gun, they'd hold a knife and that to pose with. Anymore, the boys would be posing in their cars, wouldn't they, or motorcycles or whatever. But
was there much crime?
Crime? Well, I don't know that the word was ever mentioned up there, but we had a few things happening, of course, that should have been something done about it, but nothing was. For instance, my daddy would go with the revenue officers to help locate steals. Mm-hmm. And he had... Well, one thing that happened there, he thought because of that, two fellows burned down our mill one night because they thought he had helped get the still broken up, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then my daddy had this old mule that he would ride, and the mule was good at helping him locate stills because it would sniff the mash, sour mash. Uh-huh. And from the way it would behave when it sniffed it, my dad, it was a big help in him locating them. And so one night somebody shot the mule and out in the where it was out in the pasture field. Mm-hmm. And shot it in the ear, and it didn't kill it, but it was hard of hearing. And it couldn't hear at all, I guess, in that ear after that. Mm-hmm. But that would have been a reason why it would have been shot. And then another thing that happened, he was a known bootlegger up there in the mountains, and for some reason or other, when a few of them began to own a Model A car, Model T Ford, most of them at first were, he wanted to leave his car in our barn lot one night, and So somebody that night rolled it out across the roadway and down the bank and set it afire and burned it. Well, he didn't do anything about it because he pretty well knew who did it.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were one fellow that lived in the Fighting Creek area up there that's pretty well known that he poisoned some members in his family just for some insurance. They said he had, he made three attempts on his son's life. And they said he had $500 insurance on him. He first, an accident in the barn where a big heavy timber was supposed to fall in on him and or caused him to fall out of the barn loft, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one attempt they was pretty sure he played a part in or tried. And then another thing was rolling a log over him when they were out working with some logs. And then this actually happened too with the same fellow and that same son. They were in their Model T car coming down those winding curves from Elkmont, and the daddy was in the back seat, and the boy's sister was in the front seat with him, and the daddy shot the son in the back of the neck, and the son doing the driving. But he did it when he knew the car would go into a bank instead of off the roadway, and nothing was done about it at all. And next day my daddy went up there and he found the gun up on the bank where the man had thrown it.
There was never any...
Nobody ever did anything about it. They just talked about it.
Did he receive the insurance money?
Well, I don't know about that part of it. You know, you don't go ask. I did, they said when he was on his deathbed that he called that daughter in and had a private talk with her. He wanted to talk with her privately, so I don't know whether it had anything to do with that or not. But then he did, he poisoned an aunt that lived with them, they thought, and then his wife also, because my mother helped dress the body and all, to get her ready for burial. See, we had no funeral homes up there. And when somebody passed away, right away, people in the community got busy and helped do what needed to be done. If it was some woman, why, the women took care of bathing and dressing the body.
Mm-hmm.
And if it was a man, why, then the men did that. And, of course, somebody then made the coffins to bury the men. And there's usually somebody in each community that would have some lumber suitable to make the coffin out of. My daddy's brother, Uncle Levi, lived out to Elkmont. They said kept lumber in his barn loft all the time just for coffins. And they said his grandson told me he'd get a dollar for lumber enough to make a coffin.
Mm-hmm.
And they usually... not always, but quite often they'd line it with some black, thin, cheap material, you know, they'd line them with. And I remember mighty well being at some of the funerals, and when anybody died, whether it was a bootlegger or who, everybody went to the funeral, because it was, even the little stores would close, because after all, everybody's going to be at the funeral.
Mm-hmm.
And there'd be two or three preachers get up and preach a long sermon for these long funerals. And
mm-hmm.
And then at the end of it, the congregation get up and march by the coffin, you know, to view the remains. Because the lid would all be laid off. It had to be nailed on later.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember mighty well then when everybody had gone by and then the family would go up. I remember them then nailing the lid on in the church house.
Mm-hmm.
They already had the nails set, but so then they'd lay it on and they'd go right ahead and hammer it there, and all this echoing in the hollow sound in the church building. I remember that so well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And two, it wasn't unusual at all when some at funerals up there, there'd be maybe some of the family members or kin or Well, most everybody's kin folks up there anyway, but somebody faint.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't unusual at all, some fainting around the call from there. And I think...